Blog Talk Radio.
My daddy taught me in this country everyone's the same. You work hard for your dollar and you never pass the blame when it don't go your way. Now I see all these big shots whining on my evening news about how they're losing billions and it's up to me and you to come running to. The rescue. Pardon me if I don't shed a tear, 'cause they're still in make-believe and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down, while the boss man takes his bonus pay and jets on out of town.
Welcome to the show. My guest tonight is going to be David Woodlaw. He's the author of Crimes Against Liberty, just released. His website is davidlimbaugh.com, so I want to check it out while you're listening to the show. Don't leave the show to check it out, but just have a look at it. I have him calling in right now. Hello, David?
Yes.
Hey, how are you, my friend? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Congratulations on your new release.
Thank you.
The book is titled Crimes Against Liberty. For those who don't know you, if you would be so kind, just please give a brief introduction of who you are and your work outside of Crimes Against Liberty.
I'm a lawyer, and I've written three New York Times bestsellers prior to this book, Absolute Power, Persecution, and Bankrupt. And I live in Missouri, and I got five kids. So this book hit the found out today. It hit the number one spot on the New York Times list. It's debut week last week.
It's phenomenal. It seems to be a real hunger for stuff. Things that you, someone like you, Michelle Malkin, people like that are writing, and a lot of the guests I've had on my show are writing. So I think it's so paramount to bring you, these voices on the show and give them light. And I know you've been doing a lot of media lately. I heard you with, I think it was Mark Davis this past Friday on the show. He was
No, it was a different guest host. It was Doug Urbanski.
Oh, Doug Urbanski, I'm sorry. There's so many of them on the show over the last few days. I'm getting everybody mixed up.
Right.
Mark Davis is this Friday.
Right.
So talk about what inspired this book, and I mean, it's a very provocative title. Obviously, it was set forth, but tell us what the story is behind the title. Why did you write this, and why now?
Well, the title is Crimes Against Liberty, an Indictment of Barack Obama. It's not intended to imply that Obama has violated provisions of the criminal code, nor is it intended to convey that he has committed high crimes and misdemeanors so as to constitute impeachable offenses, nor am I seeking or advocating that he be impeached in the book or elsewhere. In fact, I think it would backfire if anybody tried, and he would become a victim, and it would be distracting, and it would actually inhibit or impede our ability to reverse his disastrous agenda. So I decided to write the book because I see that he's a one-man wrecking crew. And I think he's carrying us over the brink into bankruptcy, federal bankruptcy, financial bankruptcy as a nation, and he's undermining our position in the war on terror and our national security overall. And I thought I would chronicle all of his abuses of power and in a comprehensive form, and I think I've done that with almost 400 pages of text and over 100 pages of footnotes. But in addition to that making my book unique among Obama books, I also go into his personality characteristics, which I think explain part of why he's doing what he's doing, and who he is, his hell-bent on getting his agenda passed regardless of the will of the American people, in contravention of the will of the American people, and even if it means that he would forfeit a second term in office, he's got this grandiose vision as a narcissist and, of effecting fundamental change in the United States, and he's determined to do it no matter what. And I thought that this was, it was time to present a comprehensive account of what he's done and explain just how dangerous it is, so that when our colleagues, our friends and neighbors consider whether to vote for him, they'll have a reference book, a guide of and a listing of just how much he's done and how damaging it is.
Now, I think the point that you were trying, you were actually raising earlier, impeaching him on something right now might seem frivolous, but we would end up losing in that argument from a political standpoint. We have to beat him on the issues. We need people to understand that he's wrong. And
right.
I think that's what's going on now, and a lot of people are starting to realize that you could defeat him on merits, not through political rhetoric, but through what he's actually doing. What do you think is the most, I don't want to use the word heinous, but let's use that one for now. What do you think is the most heinous of the actions that they have done? Is it ignoring the public? Is it jamming legislation through? Is it letting shadow parties and shadow organizations write different legislations, such as the health care bill, the stimulus bill, things like that, or is it something else that I haven't even touched on?
Well, I think the worst thing he's doing is bankrupting the nation. You know, George Bush promised to get the deficit down and cut it in half in 5 years or so, and he actually did it. And then and he had a robust economic record for most of his term, and the Democrats were degrading it and deriding it as just the opposite in their systematic effort to destroy him and lie about him. And the deficits were coming down prior to the recession, his final year, and then TARP. But his deficit, his final year, was $1.3 trillion. And if you factor in the repayment of TARP, it's about $800 billion. So that Obama has used that, instead of taking that number and saying, boy, we got to tighten our belts, he immediately tacked on to the $800 billion TARP bill, or $700 billion TARP bill, an $868 billion, as it turned out, dollar stimulus package, which was not even designed to stimulate. It was cynically designed to be poor political payoffs, an expansion of the government's public sector at the expense of the private sector, re-inaugurating Democratic legislative wish list, reversing welfare reform, which smuggled in, and various other things. But it was nothing about a stimulus, and it did not stimulate anything. So he adopted Bush's last budget, even before the TARP was factored in, as a new baseline. And he has presented his economic package and his financial record as, if I am able to reduce the deficits lower than $1.3 trillion, I'm saving the nation money. When, in fact, the 1.3 was an extraordinary year, and it should have been a one-off event and never recurred. And so that's the beginning fraud. He has deficits as far as the eye can see in excess of $1 trillion. He doesn't even try to rein it in, if you look at even the out years, so that we are approaching national bankruptcy, so that our the national deficits will be something approaching 104% of GDP, it has been estimated, by 2012. Unbelievably unsustainable, and yet he's making no effort to do it, to rein it in, to be a deficit hawk, despite masquerading as one. And so this is just the fact that he's bankrupting us alone is probably the worst thing. A second would be the health care system, which is revamping the health care system, which is a systemic cancer in our entire economic and medical system.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the economic factor, other than the economic conditions, it is in the Ukraine era about what Bush did. I don't like a lot of the policy that they put into place, and I think a lot of people would agree with me. There's certain things that they did that, you know, would make you scratch your head. But the thing
yeah.
is that what is going on now is in hyperdrive. As you just mentioned that we talked about 104% of the deficit being focused on GDP.
It's a point of the difference in time rather than degree. That's absolutely right. Hyperdrive, I didn't use that term.
Yeah. Now, with that, what, I mean, why do you think that the administration is doing this? Because I don't, a lot of people, I don't want to say myself, but a lot of people do see Obama as more of a puppet, and he's being pulled by strings by people that back elected him, and I'm not talking about constituents.
No, I think
shadow parties of George Soros is more. Do you think he has something, a chip on his shoulder?
I think that we underestimate his resolve and the fact that he's in charge of this at our peril. I do not think he's a puppet. I mean, there may well be all kinds of strong economic financial forces behind him who want him to do the very things he's doing. But make no mistake, he's self-driven on this stuff. He's got a grudge against America. He's an avowed socialist, I would say Marxist, a practitioner of Saul Alinsky politics, Chicago street politics. And I think that some people argue that he's adopted the Cloward strategy, which is to sabotage the American economy so that it'll be so, he'll create such chaos that he can come in on a white horse and implement full-blown socialism. And others say he's just an avowed Marxist who is implementing full-blown socialism. I say it ultimately doesn't really matter. He's initiated policies that are socialist. It doesn't really matter why. It doesn't matter why he's bankrupting us, except to the extent that part of the answer to why inheres in his personality, his characteristics, his orientation as a person who is a class warfare practitioner, who's got racial grudges, who's got grudges against America, grievances against America. And to that extent, the why is quite relevant. He is determined. It's relevant insofar as he is determined not to let up until he gets it done. In fact, I think it was Jonathan Alter's book in which he described a situation where Rahm Emanuel, radical himself in the administration, presidential advisor, was trying to caution Obama not to go too far on the health care thing against the will of the people, and Obama said, "I'm doing it, you know, get out of my way," type of thing. And so he's the guy. He's the guy calling the shots for whatever baggage he has in his life. We know he has a grudge against America for various items. I could tick off if you want me to.
There's a lot of stuff that's finally starting to come out. I kind of feel bad for him as a child. He was abandoned. His parents left him to go pursue socialist and communist and Marxist goals, his father in Kenya, and they finally just passed some sort of constitution out there to bring social justice out there. It's interesting to see that, I think we all know. But he's always been surrounded by these people, and then he started wanting to be surrounded by these people. So what do you think his endgame is? Does he want to be a totalitarian dictator, as, you know, people like, I can't even remember the guy's name right now, directors and movie stars are wanting him to be, or does he just want to just be chaos? Which one is it?
Well, I don't know that it's either of those. I think he wants to remake America fundamentally at its roots in his image, and his image is radical redistribution, knocking America down to size, undermining our national security, adopting an appeasement approach to foreign policy, an open-ended approach to terrorism, not recognizing evil in the world, but operating under the assumption that our own policies have led to terrorist recruitment and brought on the 9/11 attacks themselves. He has given away nuclear secrets that no one has ever given away in his effort to disarm us. He has given away and publicized our enhanced interrogation techniques according to the rationale that he wants to show our magnanimity, and he's turned the corner, and we're not doing the kinds of things that provoke innocent terrorists. You know, you realize the ridiculous illogic of the idea, of the notion, that if we're just nice to peace-loving Muslims, that they won't, and if we demonstrate violence, such as in these enhanced interrogation techniques, that will drive otherwise peace-loving Muslims to gravitate towards people who engage in worse violence. Does that make any sense to you? They're disgusted with our violence, and they become hyper Clockwork Orange ultraviolent. I just don't get the logic. It's silly. But the whole liberal notion that you can appease and convert terrorism to terrorists, jihadists, to peaceable human beings is beyond folly. I can't believe we're even having a national discussion about this, but that's where the left is today, and Obama is vintage leftist.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you think is people should do to rise up against? Obviously, people have to take this into their own hands. We saw a lot of people trying to restore an honor rally. I was there on 8/28. No matter how people feel about that, the atmosphere was electric. So people are just energized. They're happy to see their country again. They're not despotic. They're looking for something. They're looking for someone. What do people need to do now to end this? Because we know that, you know, $500,000 two-bedroom houses in a crappy neighborhood isn't a reality. It's not supposed to be this way, but it is right now. It's all fake. It's all funny money. What do you think people need to do right now?
I think they need to become active like they are doing. We're seeing a spontaneous grassroots uprising throughout the country that is not astroturf, it is not inauthentic, it is completely real, as opposed to the FBI union thug bus driven in by the government and by Obama's people to stage protests or to create or to invoke violence against peaceable protesters. I think we need to peaceably rise up in arms, figuratively, and oust these people at the ballot box in a big, resounding way. And we do not need to lose heart, lose courage, compromise our principles, because the biggest impediment we have as a nation in restoring foundational American principles is our own side losing courage, listening to those who say we have to mollify the center, we have to move to the center in order to reach independence. Wrong. The way we reach people who are in the middle and to energize our own base is to take principled conservative positions. Then people will gravitate toward us and will be inspired by our leadership. I do not think, and I pray and hope that I'm right, that Tea Partiers are looking for salvation in a single personality, in a leader, in a charismatic leader. That's the mistake that occurred under Obama. Conservatives should be realistic enough to understand that charisma alone isn't going to unite. We need principle, isn't going to get us where we want to get. We're not talking about charisma or FaceTime or any kind of superficial qualities. We're talking about uniting behind someone who will restore the American ideal. And hopefully that person will have enough leadership and attractiveness as a candidate. But this idea about, you know, charisma where, you know, you get somebody who's slick, or somebody who has all the trappings of a leader, and does not have the substance, I'm done with that. I never did adhere to that kind of thing. But the majority of Americans did. It's wrong to look in this, in our very form of government, it's wrong to look for salvation in a single leader. It's got to be the message that this candidate is conveying.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. I think the Republican Party really needs to wake up. I think a lot of people within the party should be fired right off the bat. I'm talking about the RNC. I'm talking about within the ranks, the local parties, state GOPs, all that. A lot of them are getting kicked out, Lisa Murkowski, Bennett, and a slew of others. One thing that I actually really wanted to mention tonight is a quote. It's when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. We have to resist in some capacity, and the best way, as you mentioned, is through the ballot box. Do you think that this election cycle will be favorable towards liberty, or do you think that people are just so depressed that it's not going to show up, they're going to forget?
Absolutely not. I mean, if Obama's done one thing, it is to energize patriots. I mean, you can't, I assume it's a devil's advocate question, because you can't really believe that apathy reigns now. I mean, people are up in arms. This is, I have never seen a nation so agitated at a president of the United States and at a Democratic Congress for abusing their power and for driving the nation over the financial brink, for destroying this country. I mean, I think everybody, you just talk to your friends and neighbors, and they all are just blown away by how bad this is. and how and what acceleration this guy has done to tear up this nation, to destroy this nation and uproot its founding principles. I am very confident that this is real. This is authentic, and grassroots uprising is going to make a dramatic difference, even more than the pollsters can anticipate, because a lot of this is subjective and can't be pulled. And it'll be a tidal wave. The only thing it won't, the only reason it won't be, is if some people on our side who are either elites or too cute by half try to overanalyze and play these political games and strategize and say, oh, we just got to calculate. We've got to weigh our political capital, and we've got to conserve. If we fight one issue real hard, we can't fight the next one real hard. We've got to pick and choose. No, we fight every single solitary issue that deserves to be fought. We oppose it 110%, and then we gain political capital by doing so, by gaining credibility with the people, because they want principled leadership. They want principled opposition. It's not like you're borrowing some goodwill from people. It's like you're doing their work. You're acting in the national interest. And so it's a myth by these eggheads who write in some of these magazines to say that there's a finite amount of capital. There's not. There's not, as long as you're doing the right thing. Then you go on and fight every issue 110%, just like the radical left is, which is why they control our cultural institutions, why they control the universities, while they intimidate us in the area of political correctness and seem to be in the majority when they are vastly outnumbered by 2-to-1. If you could get the real truth about self-identification, twice as many people identify as conservatives as liberals. We need to get some backbone. We need to get some confidence and courage in our convictions, and we can trounce them if we just do it the right way.
Mm-hmm. So you definitely not at a loss for question. I think that's very refreshing. We've seen a lot of lackadaisical reporting and commentators and pundits and journalists in the last 10 to 15 years. I think it's time to see people such as you, David Limbaugh and Michelle Falcon, come up and get a little bit louder than they were before and actually have a podium to do so. And, you said your book just came out, and it's already number one.
That is exactly right. This message is resonating. I mean, I am proud of the book, but at the same time, I recognize that if the time wasn't right, this wouldn't sell at all. But notwithstanding all the friends I have in the media who are really helping me, this message is resonating. People are hungry, hungry, hungry. They are starved. They are outraged. This is the country they love that they want to bequeath to the children they love. It's like their parents and grandparents bequeathed to them, to us. And we will not be able to bequeath the greatest nation in the history of the world, the most prosperous nation in the history of the world, the freest nation in the history of the world, and the strongest nation in the history of the world, unless we radically reverse this disastrous course that Obama started. And I'm telling you, it's just that serious. And I sit around in the shower as I prepare for these interviews in the morning. I contemplate whether I'm exaggerating or overstating the case, and I always come back to the emphatic answer that I am not. No way you can overstate this case. The greatest nation in the history of the world is on the brink of losing itself, of forfeiting itself. And it's unacceptable for this baby boom generation that I'm a part of to commit suicide in the name of some stupid, mythical, utopian, wrong-headed, warped worldview. We've just got to stick with our principles.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I encourage people to go out and read your book. Just read continuously. You can take anything from someone, but do not take your books. I think there's so much value in the written word, things that you can learn from watching TV and things like that. You got to read books. I encourage people to pick up your book called Crimes Against Liberty. And David Limbaugh, once again, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on, Alexander. It's really been great.
My pleasure, my honor. Thank you so much. God bless you, and good luck with your book.
You too. Thank you.